Welcome to Inside Hillcat Nation, a different look at RSU Hillcat Athletics. Now your host, the voice of the Hillcats, Josh Haley.
We welcome you to Inside Hillcat Nation. I'm your host, Josh Haley, and we've got an exciting inaugural show for you today as we take a look inside the Rogers State Athletic Department. Coming up today, we'll be joined by Rogers State men's soccer coach Derek Larkin and senior player Jordan Watson, as well as men's and women's cross country and track and field head coach Matt Kennedy, as well as senior runner Nick Williams. But we're very excited to start off the show with Rogers State's head athletic trainer, Trey Robertson. Trey, thanks for taking the time to be with us this week. A lot going on in the athletic department. But first, I want to kind of rewind a little bit. If we go back to March, at the time that athletics were shut down in the middle of March, that came to a screeching halt kind of out of nowhere. What were those first few weeks like for you and the training staff here at Rogers State?
I think it was kind of facing the unknown, really. We had no idea how long this was going to last and how it was going to have we didn't know the impact it was going to have on the university and the athletic world. I remember I was covering a softball game, and I started getting notifications on my phone from the NCAA about suspension of March Madness, and then I kind of had an idea that we were probably going to be in this for the long haul. So there was a little bit of concern because you're going into something that you're not sure how it's going to how long it's going to last and what the impact's going to be.
Then we fast forward, we start to learn things as time goes on. We figure out play is suspended indefinitely. And what kind of preparation goes into the summer, if you will, preparing for the fall, even though everything was really unknown, you know, up until the final hour?
Well, it is kind of challenging. We kind of adapted the term fluid and be flexible. A lot of our student athletes were very flexible, and we had to learn to kind of develop policies as we went and kind of also make sure that everybody knew that these policies were going to be very tentative. Nothing was going to be set in stone, because as we learned more about COVID, the more policies were going to change in different directions. And you know, you read the news or watch the news, you're going to see that everything changes on a weekly basis on numbers and potential spreaders and, you know, so we've been able to adapt it. We've kind of set kind of our baseline and following our CDC guidelines and along with what the NCAA has released in their recommendations to develop most of our policies. So that has helped significantly, but it is changing, and it's still changing on a daily basis.
You've been at Rogers State a long time. Jeff Payton, the assistant athletic trainer and strength and conditioning coordinator, has been here a considerable amount of time as well. There's quite a few of the coaches that have been here a considerable time as well. How much easier does it make uncharted waters whenever you have a great working relationship and a long-lasting relationship with most of these folks?
We do. We've got a great coaching staff here, and they'll do whatever we need them to do to make the transition of a COVID world easier to navigate, especially with their players. The one thing that we like to tell our student athletes is it's no longer 2019, so you can't have the mindset of what you did in 2019. There's a lot of considerations that have to go into place. And a lot of staff meetings throughout the summer and before we started back took place, and we talked with our coaches about the changes they can expect. And I think it was one of, it's not something that they were not prepared to deal with. I think they were prepared to deal with it. I think it was just a matter of, you know, extending to them, this is nothing that's being personally driven through your individual sports. This is something we have to do in order to protect each other and our student athletes. And I think once we've had those discussions, it's made it easier to kind of transition into all of our policy changes. They've been pretty well received. We haven't really had any bumps in the road with it. I mean, it's kind of, there's no gray area. It's black and white, unfortunately, with our policies. So that's been fortunate. We've had some good coaches that have come on board and have accepted those and willing to work with us in that regard.
Even though there was a suspension and ultimately a postponement for most sports that were supposed to happen in the fall to the spring, a lot of the teams were able to come and start their official practices and get going there. So walk us through what the screening processes look like as of now.
Well, we currently require all of our student athletes, and that includes our cheer and dance teams, to do a nightly COVID screening. It's a series of 7 questions, as well as a temperature check, which they have to record. Those screenings are submitted to head coaches that night after I review them. And we kind of have a determination if somebody's possibly developing any symptoms. But we also do temperature checks throughout the day. And one of the things that we've tried to do, which is really difficult for a student athlete, is to make sure they understand if they're not feeling well, they need to stay away. It's just kind of been educating them on the process of that mindset of instead of pushing through something if you don't feel well, if you don't feel well, you shouldn't show up because we don't want to take the chance of making other people sick. So that's been kind of a tough one to overcome. But for the most part, we're doing very well with our screening process. It's a phone app they can do. They get a notification every night at 7 p.m. They got 3 hours to complete the screening. And then at 10 p.m., I submit those to the coaches so we kind of have an idea going into the next day who's possibly something we need to follow up on or if everybody's healthy enough to go the next day.
From my vantage point, at least kind of from an outsider's view, it seems like there's been a very good educational process to the student athletes and the coaches and everybody of if we want to play, if we want to take the steps forward, then it's so necessary to really report anything or mention anything that might be going wrong so that we're not to set ourselves back a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a month.
Exactly. I think one of the things that we've tried to tell our coaches early on is at some point you have to put some of the responsibility back on the student athlete. And I think the biggest message that we have tried to deliver to our student athletes is how bad do you want to play this year? Because everything's going to hinge on you following the simple guidelines that we set out. And we've had a very good response to that. We really haven't had a lot of people that are resistant to the ideas that we're trying to put out there. And it is true. You want to try to educate them as much as possible. And we kind of go through our simple things and the social distancing guidelines and use of mask, washing hands, reporting symptoms if you're not feeling well. Those are all important things. And you kind of hope by this time they've all kind of learned that by heart. But on occasion, you still have to remind people, maintain 6 feet, put your mask all the way up, make sure you cover your nose, make sure you're washing your hands throughout the day. I think the biggest thing for us is that has been difficult from a sports medicine perspective. It changed everything that we did. So we've limited the size of people inside and out of locker rooms, as well as limiting the space inside the athletic training facilities. We no longer use community shared areas like water coolers. Everybody has their individual bottle. They bring them to practice, and we have a designated individual that wears PPE that actually refills those bottles as needed. So it has changed everything that we do as well. So there has been a little bit of a learning curve for us, but for the most part, I think the students have embraced it pretty well.
The practice sessions you kind of alluded to there on what some of those processes look like, but when it comes to actual competition and preparing for competition, the meat of the practice, what does that look like?
It's pretty much the same. The only difference we have really is use of mask and when to use a mask. Currently our policy is if they're actively engaged in high intensity activity, they don't have to wear a mask because that can create other health issues. And so when they're not actively engaged in high intensity activities, we ask that they put on a mask. So if they're in team meetings, either pre-stretching or post-practice stretching, they also wear a mask. If they are anytime that they're together, they wear a mask. So, but for the most part, the practice has been pretty similar. We just have to continue to monitor social distancing guidelines. If you are not actively engaged, try to stay 6 feet away from somebody. And we've had really no issues with that. So, but they're pretty much the same.
I know in past years, you and Jeff Payden have hosted multiple interns who are moving into the field of sports medicine. What has that looked like so far this fall?
It's actually been pretty good. We have a new athletic training intern now for the year. Her name is Annette Morton. She comes to us from San Angelo State, and she'll be with us for the course of the year. We also have some graduate level interns that are working on their masters, both at Oklahoma State and University of Tulsa, respectively. And they'll be here for the semester. And it's been kind of nice to actually engage with interns. You always hear interns and you think, well, that's just free labor in a sense. But it's much more than that. We want to make sure that when they leave Rogers State University, they have a well-rounded background in working in sports medicine. We like to refer to it as they're working with a net. So Jeff and I are the net, obviously. And they are able to do things. So if they do something that they don't have or they have concerns about or they're not sure about, then they have us to fall back on and ask questions to. But we do let them kind of get their hands dirty in a sense and dive right in and get to working with our student athletes. And I think it's the only truly way you can get a good learning opportunity is to be hands-on. and not so much just from an observation standpoint. I think you actually have to be physically doing it to learn the process.
Some of the things that you know go into your normal weekly schedule, I know, is travel on a typical basis, but that is all cut out right now. But I know that doesn't mean that there's an excess of time. You probably find yourself even more busy with the situations at hand.
That's very true. You know, the one thing about this experience with COVID is, although it may look like, you know, well, you have all this time on your hands, it's actually been more of developing policies. A lot more time spent reading and researching to develop those policies. So, you know, it's not one of those, unfortunately, I hadn't had that vacation. Everybody keeps talking about their COVID vacation. I haven't had that. I mean, I've had some time away from the office, but I'm still, you know, developing policies, typing up, you know, procedures and protocols and what that's going to look like and researching what other institutions are doing. Engaged, phone calls with our athletic director and our team physicians and figure out how that's going to play out and what it's going to look like and how we're going to be able to do it. I think I still have that conversation in my head in the evenings is, how are we going to make this work? And those are the things when you get up every day, you try to tackle those and address those. And, it has been kind of nice to have a break from travel. I do like to travel associated with our sports. I like being able to compete. But at the same time, it has been kind of nice to take a step back for a little bit and say, okay, take a breather. I'm hoping soon that we'll get back to it so we can compete.
We're talking with the Roger State head athletic trainer, Trey Robertson. What about athlete recovery? These athletes haven't had competition, of course, but that doesn't mean the bumps and bruises and wear and tear on the body doesn't still happen. In practice, we know it does. Does it allow for a little bit different of a timeline and a little bit different planning in what goes into recovery, given that they're not having to compete on game day right now?
That's a good question. It has been a little bit easier, I think, for the fall sports because there hasn't been that push that if somebody is injured, they want to be able to recover faster so they can get ready for the next competition. So there's never been that driving force of getting better quick so they can compete. With this little bit of a suspension of fall sports, we have been able to progress somebody a little bit slower, which has helped us in the healing phase of their recovery phase of their injuries. It has also allowed us to spend more time kind of one-on-one with the student athlete doing the appropriate rehab that we normally don't get during your normalcy of your championship seasons. So that has been kind of nice, and it's been beneficial for the student athlete as well. The one thing that I do notice that I am kind of worried about is the trend of possibly doing so many games in a week because we're trying to condense the season is the potential for other injuries that occur because you're not getting a chance to heal. So, seasons that have a lot of games in a shortened amount of time, that's my fear is I think you're seeing it across the board in a lot of professional sports right now. A lot of injuries are occurring because you're not having that time for recovery. And so I think there's another side of that coin, and that is when we do get to that and we do have condensed seasons, my concern is going to be just the number of injuries we have because we don't have the recovery time that we typically would have.
From talking with you and with Jeff Payden in the past, I know that in the sports medicine world, there's the ability to create a large network from interacting with other athletic trainers and strength and conditioning coordinators around the country and specifically in the conference in the region. How big of a help has that been, if any, to this point with just talking with people that you know and being able to bounce ideas off of one another or saying, hey, this process worked well for us or things like that?
It's been very beneficial. I can't tell you, probably on a weekly basis, I will reach out to 3 or 4 colleagues at different schools and we'll talk about different things of, hey, this is working for us. Are you doing this? Have you had any luck doing this? And that has been very beneficial. And I'm reaching out to colleagues at every level, so Division I, Division II, Division III, just to see what everybody's doing. It's kind of nice to actually get some feedback. And maybe they have an approach of, well, we're doing this, and it's been effective, but I wouldn't do this. That way we can kind of avoid some of the pitfalls that maybe they fell into. But I think having that network and those resources, I think you have to use them. And every institution is going to be different, obviously, we're not going to be able to test everybody, like some institutions can just because of budgets. But I think having some alternative ways to do that, and I think that's why it's good to have maybe different resources, not just ones at a certain level, so you can kind of navigate through those waters with some help. And I think that's important.
We know as of right now that the first sport that we could potentially see would be basketball, as it's scheduled for a return in mid to late November. We know that things could change between now and then, as we've seen, if history repeats itself. But as of now, that is the first sport scheduled to start. How does that affect your scheduling and you know, kind of what your priorities and processes look like on a daily basis as the season gets so close?
Well, we actually had a meeting this morning discussing kind of basketball season and how that will look. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. Not only do we need to look at just our inner bubble of our basketball team, but we also have to look at things like, you know, the scoring table. You know, those are individuals who are going to be inside or close to the basketball bubble. We also have to look at our cheer and dance teams because they're also going to be intermixed. So the idea is you want to try to keep your bubble separate, but there's in basketball, it's going to be hard to do that. So a lot of thought has to go into, okay, are we going to require testing and screening for those workers and those volunteers and those you know, cheer and dance teams? Are we going to require a certain distance between them? How are tickets going to look like? How are people going to be sitting together? Do we need to develop a pod system? Do we need to have them sit in groups that they arrive with? So there's a lot of factors that go into that. And, you know, working with the athletic department closely on getting that just to make it safe for everybody. But again, at the end of the day, we're trying to make it where we can still make it happen. It's just going to look a lot different because of COVID. And unfortunately, we have to be prepared. And we'd always ask that of all of our, obviously our fan base, but also, you know, parents. You know, it's like I said earlier, it's not 2019. So we have to make changes to protect you and our student athletes. At the end of the day, we want to be able to give them a season of competition. And these are the things we have to do in order to do that. And I think that you have that mindset going in. It can be kind of an uphill battle at times. And I know that I've talked with several people in the athletic department. It is also kind of a frustration because there are certain things you want to do, you just can't do. But at the end of the day, you know, you're wanting to be able to put out there where people can compete, and you want people to come watch, of course, but you also want them to do it safely. And I think there's a lot of factors that go into that. So we're still working on that. It's a work in progress, and we're still hearing more back from the NCAA, our conference, you know, and the university. So we will continue to work in that manner.
When competition is normally going on, I know there's a lot of communication leading up to game day between both schools' training staffs. It would seem that would be probably amplified maybe 10 times over with the current situation once we are back to competition.
Oh, absolutely. I think now it becomes a matter of one of the recommendations on our conference call last week with the MIAA athletic trainers was there was a recommendation they want to actually send an athletic trainer for every basketball event. I don't know if that's feasible for some of the schools that are in our conference, but those are things that we do want to talk about. You know, are you bringing somebody? Because that's going to entail, okay, who's doing the water situation? You know, we had to make a determination. There's going to be no more towels. So these are all important steps that we all have to have as a group. So we're all on the same page. I think it has to be kind of standardized and consistent across the board throughout the conference. And luckily, we have a good group of athletic trainers in our conference that are willing to kind of say, you know, we need to have some consistency here and we're gonna do these. But there's a lot of times that, you know, especially even pre-COVID, if somebody needed something, they would pick up a phone or email and say, hey, this person needs this, can you take care of it for me? We'd be happy to help them out. I would want the same thing if I was on the road. And it's always nice when you are in a different town and you don't know where things are, you can pick up a phone and ask where something is and they'd be there to help you in a heartbeat. And that's just kind of nice. It's good professionalism, but just it's good to have that kind of camaraderie in, you know, in your organization. And it does help. And what we're getting ready to find out with COVID is there's going to be some situations with testing protocols and screening processes that every school is going to be different in how they do it. But I think it's going to be important to establish that communication so everybody's on the same page when you do arrive for that event. So it is going to be, like I said earlier, it's going to be an uphill battle. But I think it's one that we will all be able to handle, you know, in a good manner. I mean, we're able to adapt and we've learned to establish policy kind of on the fly as we go, so to speak. And we've also learned to adapt really well to the surroundings that we're faced with. And I think we'll continue to do that.
In talking with some of the coaches here throughout this whole pandemic that we've gone through, I know that they all speak in unison in that they know what the process is, they know how to follow it, and they feel like it's a smooth running system. That has to probably give you some relief if basketball does start and somebody's going on the road, it leaves you with less of a training staff at home. But just having that comfortability and confidence in knowing that they've already been doing the processes and they know how to do it.
Right. I used to always tell people, and I still do this when we have our meetings, but there is a method to the madness. you know, I have policies in place for a reason. And I guess the rewarding fact for me is when you have coach and staff and even athletes that have the light bulb moment of, this is why we're doing these things. This makes sense now. And when they see that, and when you compare it to maybe some of the other places we go to, or, you know, maybe other people we play, or they see the differences. And I think there's more of that appreciation of what we do for the student athlete versus what some other places may not. And I think that kind of sets us. I always have that. I want to set our bar a little bit higher because I want people to be able to meet that expectation. But I like that. I think it's a good feeling to have. It's like our screening process. I don't know how many other schools are doing a daily screening. But I like how we are doing that daily screening for our student athletes. And it just kind of, it holds them accountable, but also tells me at the end of the day, if somebody's got a symptomatic issue coming up that we need to be made aware of, then I have that next day to start working on getting them to be seen if they need to be seen. So, but it is kind of nice to be able to have those processes in place. And we do have those, every once in a while, we have those coaches and staff that light bulb moment. Oh, this is why you're doing this. This makes sense. So there is a method to the madness. Just you know, allow us to help you play, and I know it's not going to be easy, but this is what we have to do. And like I said, there's a good buy-in with that, so that helps.
He's head athletic trainer Trey Robertson here at Rogers State University. We'll take a timeout, but coming up after the break, we'll be joined by Rogers State men's soccer coach Derek Larkin and senior player Jordan Watson.